Greetings from sunny Chihuahua, Mexico. This is your host, Phil Stover. I welcome each of you to the fourth episode of the first season of my new podcast, Dancing in the Minefields. Feedback from this series of podcasts, along with a website and Facebook group page, will allow us to discuss the joys and challenges of the forces for and against public education in the United States. I've enjoyed the opportunity to informally and formally observe, interact, work with, and assess employees at all levels and in virtually every position in districts from Apalachicola to Anchorage. I offer the listener my conclusions about which characteristics, traits, and competencies I believe are helpful in creating a fruitful and flourishing district employee. Now, I chose the words fruitful and flourishing carefully. In their youth, I suggest that a fruitful employee is effective, productive, and valuable in the work assigned to the person, whether as a board member, food service worker, or subject area coordinator. By flourishing, I suggest that the person is personally thriving, fulfilled, and content in their work. As a consultant, I often provided feedback during times of stress and discontinuity in a district. My ability to help a district often depended on the accuracy of the feedback, both data-driven and observed, that I provided. I often had to make assessments in a short period of time. I worked very hard to do so well. Of course, sometimes I missed the mark. Now, my listener, in that spirit of cautious incertitude, I offer you feedback on the 9 characteristics I observed in those employees who seemed to be both fruitful and flourishing in their work. I would simply add that I believe that a community of such employees makes for the same characteristics in their teams, departments, schools, and in district governance. Now, I would acknowledge these are not strictly laboratory-determined conclusions. They are based on my lived observations. I simply suggest that the degree to which they are present in individual employees and stakeholders, the more fruitful and flourishing they and their districts collectively will be in reaching their teaching and learning goals. Now, here we go, in no particular order. Number 1, knowledge. Now, knowledge is an advanced understanding of an individual's responsibilities and requirements. This must be combined with a foundational understanding of the complicated nature, not just of the specific task, but also of the public school environment, including collective and individual staff, students, stakeholders, and resource management. Sometimes we limit the importance of knowledge to that of academic discipline. Virtually every employee in a district must also have a knowledge of school law, school finances, the nature and culture of the local community, and the limits within which one may exercise their responsibility. To summarize, knowledge used well and added to experience may often produce our second characteristic, competence. Number 2, competence differs from knowledge in that it requires a necessary learned skill level to be proficient in performing the task at hand. Proficiency, or competence, is the ability to use knowledge and skill to demonstrate that which is necessary to succeed at the tasks required in a specific job category. The teacher who has subject or content mastery but does not know how to effectively adapt and deliver that knowledge to both the classroom and an individual student will not teach at an optimal level. The relationship between competence and standards is an important discussion point regarding student learning. At times, we fail to realize that the same discourse related to the performance of district adults is equally valid. Competence is much more than time on task, whether the subject being measured is the student or the employee. Confidence in one's competency then is a freeing mechanism that may lead to our third characteristic, judgment. Number three, judgment. Having the good sense to make good decisions given the situation's specific context. Good judgment considers the potential implications on others of a given action, comment, or decision, and responds and perhaps even refrains accordingly. Knowing what to say or do is often ineffective unless the appropriate when, how, and expected result of an action, decision, or comment is considered as well. For example, in a school district climate, one may need to learn the distinction between being an advocate and an activist for one's personal priorities when interacting with students or even fellow employees. Once again, the how, when, and correctly anticipating the result becomes super important. An understanding of all three is vital to the expression of sound judgment. Judgment also has a secondary meaning that may be equally important in a school district's complex and diverse community. This attribute is the ability to hear or receive from fellow employees, students, or stakeholders the worldview, thoughts, opinions, or beliefs with which you may strongly disagree without the need to pass judgment on what you hear. Sociologist Wade Davis once wisely said, quote, "The world in which you were born is just one model of reality. Other cultures are not failed attempts at being you. They are unique manifestations of the human spirit." End of quote. Reserving judgment is often more prudent than disseminating your disapproval, especially when broadcasted at the wrong place and time. A preponderance of good judgment in decision-making, together with an equal preponderance of withholding judgment, seasoned with knowledge and competence, may lead to our fourth variable, that of wisdom. Number four, wisdom. An ability to make good decisions based on applying the challenges and learnings gained from life experience, especially in the presence of competing points of view, and when there may be negative consequences, especially on the students. It is important to maintain the ability to introspect and understand one's own unique limitations and apply the same to each unique situation in the district. Wisdom comes to the forefront when one has power. Knowing how, when, and if to exercise power is an aspect of wisdom. Wisdom in an environment like a public school district is knowing that people and students surround you who have differing ideas from your own, and you respond by wanting to learn from each of them, even if such response proves your prior certitude to be something less than correct. Failure to commit to learning from those who are not you may produce what Nobel Prize winner Daniel Kahneman deemed, quote, angry science, a nasty world of critiques, replies, and rejoinders that don't ultimately change anyone's mind, end of quote. Perchance, wisdom leads to the realization, again, in Kahneman's words, that, quote, "when you ask people, why do you believe what you believe? They answer by giving reasons for their beliefs. Subjectively, we experience that reasons are prior to the beliefs that can be deduced from them. But we know that the power of reasons is an illusion. The belief will not change when the reasons are defeated. The causality is reversed. People believe the reasons because they believe in the conclusion. End of quote. Demonstrating wisdom and a desire to learn from the other may contribute to the development of the fifth critical variable in my model, that of trust. Number five, trust incorporates two aspects, that of being trustworthy and having the ability to trust others. Both are equally important. Being trustworthy requires one to respond consistently to those variables that arise under differing circumstances. The ability to trust involves the capacity to take risks when circumstances might indicate otherwise. Brick and Schneider have written an entire book on the importance of trust in a school district. They deem trust, quote, a core resource for improvement in schools, end of quote. They also remind us of the early 20th century education guru John Dewey, who advised that, quote, a good elementary school is more akin to a family than a factory, end of quote. Managing change is often predicated on creating and modeling trust, whether in the emotionally charged environment of a family or a school district. Trust is a vital attribute to be used carefully. Once lost, it can rarely be found again. I do believe that it is easier to trust when all of your eggs of identity and security are not committed to one basket called the district. That involves being engaged in being grounded in something other than the district. Being grounded is our sixth variable in being a fruitful and flourishing district employee. So number six, grounding. Whenever as a consultant or a district employee, I would end a meeting that I had chaired, I would encourage each attendee to stay grounded in something other than the district. My experience tells me that somewhere, sometime in almost everyone's tenure working in a school district, an employee, stakeholder, or even a student will experience disappointment, disillusionment, or disagreement. In such a complex environment, such is almost invariable. I would never dare to suggest in what they should be grounded, but it needs to be something other than the district. Districts are wonderful environments in which to work, but they can also cause great harm if an employee has their entire sense of self grounded therein. I once created a tenet for my own work that said, quote, the trees that are the most grounded are those with the deepest roots in the richest soil through which they draw sustenance, sufficiency, sustainability, and support. In the largest forest, each tree stands or falls alone, depending on how well it is grounded. End of quote. This belief is a crucial component behind my seventh characteristic, that of sustaining a strong internal locus of control. Number seven, internal locus of control. A psychological construct that indicates a person who believes they have control over and are responsible for the outcome of a majority of their own lived experiences. When that is neither possible nor reality, they then strive to exert self-control over their own point in time emotional, rational, and physical response to those overwhelming circumstances. Both of these aspects of internal locus of control are vital to success in such a complicated and complex environment as a school district, especially a large urban or hierarchically top-down district. And those do exist. This concept has been applied to student learning and achievement for many years. Many studies have been done on student learning and locus of control, both internal and external. According to Stephen Nowicki, a proponent of this trait, internal locus of control in students is a causal factor in improving student achievement, not the result of the same. Much less attention has been paid to the impact of a strongly internal locus control on the adults in the room, typically the district employees and stakeholders, including parents. Whether you are the superintendent, a maintenance planner, an auditor, or a resource teacher, you can almost be assured that not everything will always go your way. You may make mistakes. At some point of time, in employment or engagement with a school district, some external force will seek to impose its will on you. This can result in a sense of hopelessness, powerlessness, and even failure. When that happens, then your reaction to that imposition is the next very important variable. Those external driving forces, whether inside or outside the district, may get you down, but don't let them keep you down. If you made a serious mistake, admit it. If you are judged unfairly, bear up under that burden and maintain courage, even when your future in the district may be in doubt. Indeed, courage is the eighth trait necessary for being successfully engaged in public education. Number 8, courage. This attribute describes a readiness to move forward, sideways, backwards, or to stand still, whichever is best, in the face of difficult, challenging, or occasionally even dangerous situations. We are often best served when courage and wisdom go hand in hand. Public school work is often difficult, almost always challenging, and rarely, yet occasionally, dangerous. Raymond Lindquist is quoted as advising that, quote, courage is the power to let go of the familiar, end of quote. I like that a lot. A learning environment is one that encourages courage, letting go of the safe and the familiar to move to that which is unfamiliar and new. That is the mission of every public school in serving both its students, employees, and stakeholders. While it may not be self-apparent, I believe it is important to recognize that courage and grace go hand in hand. Number 9, grace. I look at grace as being the ability and readiness to grant unmerited favor, kindness, or patience to someone who has not yet earned or deserved it. It is a giving of oneself without concern about possible personal loss in so doing. I think the key word here is unmerited. To be kind to someone who has been kind to you may not be so difficult. Being kind to someone who has been angry, mean-spirited, or hostile with you is indeed an act of grace. Public education is a place of many competing priorities, opinions, and values. It is a place that needs a little more grace when dealing with those who hold differing values and priorities than your own. Oh, and sometimes when it comes to dancing, we might say a particular person moves with a particular grace. So let it be with you while dancing in the mind fields. Rather than being intrinsic to being human, I believe each attribute that we have discussed is in its own way learned, or perhaps at times unlearned. While many districts provide knowledge-based training, professional development, few, if any, provide the same on the other 8 characteristics. Given that reality, I do believe it is possible to offer training in the growth of these 9 characteristics in the lives of district employees, especially when they are consistently modeled by district leaders. They certainly are valuable traits in learning to dance in the mind fields of public education. I am sure there are other traits that are important as well, but from my own notes, reflections, and observations, I offer you, my listener, these 9 as reflective of important traits in the lives of fruitful and flourishing adults serving and, yes, dancing in the mind fields of public education. Thanks for tuning in to this, the 4th of our first season of podcasts. Please subscribe to us on your favorite podcast channel and email us how we are doing at phil@thedistrictmatters.com. That's phil@thedistrictmatters.com. You can also contact us on our website at riovistagroup.com or join our Facebook group at www.facebook.com/groups/dancing-in-the-mind-fields/. Everyone, this is Phil Stover wishing you a really good day, and please, let's all keep on dancing.